Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Theater Podcast, intimate personal conversations with theater's biggest names. I'm your host, Alan Seals, and this interview today is with Leslie Margarita, who is a great example of someone constantly working who doesn't necessarily need to spend all their time in New York City, especially on Broadway. She's from the West Coast, kind of prefers the West Coast, skipped over New York to make a West End debut, which earned her an Olivier Award, and then came to Broadway. So just kind of all over the place and always working. We get into this a little bit in the interview, but she has this love for ice dancing. She has this little hidden talent of building on her young life as almost a professional ice skater, I guess, and now is doing ice dancing. She needs something as a hobby, as like this mental respite that has nothing to do with that her industry, and gosh, her eyes light up when she talks about it. And of course, we talk about performing and theater, but this episode, it gets into mental health a lot. She had a really hard time after kind of her big break at the age of 18 or 19, I think she said, where she got on Fame LA. She was literally a teenager, thrust into the spotlight, national TV. And then after that, it was just kind of like, my career isn't laid out for me and I'm not being treated like I thought I would be now. She went to a dark place, and we get into that especially. It was a really, really great conversation. So Leslie, if you're listening, thank you for your honesty. I really enjoyed it. Before we get into it though, as always, please visit me at ttp.fm. to see everything online, listen to past episodes. You can also show your support for the podcast via ttp.fm/Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Patrons of a certain level get to get their questions in ahead of time and get them as part of the interview. So you can actually help shape the conversation a little bit among many, many other tiers of amazing things. So everybody now, please enjoy this episode with Leslie Margarita.
There are so many things in life that stress me out. You know what shouldn't stress me out? Eating! So we can all eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So you can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options for all dietary needs. And you can discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and even some drinks to help you stay fueled up. Factor is also celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month's Eats badge on the menu for our lowest carbon footprint meals. Say that 5 times fast. Earth Month Eats. Earth Month Eats. Just remember, these no fuss, no mess meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, and cleaning up. So just simply heat and eat the good stuff. Head to factormeals.com/TTP50 and use code TTP50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code TTP50 at factormeals.com/TTP50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. So what are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up your springtime goals.
Great expectations.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Here you go, one, two, three.
This Olivier Award-winning actress made her Broadway debut in Matilda in 2013 after a successful run on the West End in Zorro, which earned her the aforementioned award. She was recently in Dames at Sea here on Broadway, but made a big splash in the entertainment scene back in 1997 in the TV show Fame LA.
Oh, baby Les.
Oh. About to open Emoji Land off-Broadway as the Princess, Leslie Margarita. Welcome to the Theater Podcast.
Thanks. Oh my gosh, 97.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Teen on TV.
That was 22 years ago.
Yeah. I was a teenager. Crazy.
Were you a teenager at the time?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, well, talk to me about baby Leslie.
Mm-hmm.
You grew up in California.
I grew up in California. Yeah, Northern California. And I grew up on a cattle ranch. Crazy, I know, right? Grew up on a cattle ranch. Uh-huh. And
so, like, can you do a lasso?
I did not. I just did shows with the cows. yeah.
That sounds like an only child thing to do. Well, are you an only child?
No, I'm the youngest of four. Yes. And my three older sisters are much older. So I was clearly a mistake. And so I was kind of an only child. And so I just would like put on shows because I was always already dancing and stuff at that age. And I started doing musicals at like eight. The touring company of Annie was coming through.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'm just going to go and audition. And my dad went and got me like the sign up sheet. And my parents were like, just, you know, there's going to be 500 little girls there. And there were, with like ringlets. And I was just in my jeans from the ranch, and I ended up getting one of the orphans. And the rest is history.
So, okay. Well, what made you decide to want to audition in the first place?
My dance teacher, my ballet teacher, ran like the community theater.
So you're already taking
and
dance
so
at that point?
I was taking dance since I was four because they thought, now I think it's like ADD, but they didn't know what. But I was just hyper. And my mom danced. And so they put me in classes and I loved it. And then I just hadn't like sung. And I just decided to show up and sang happy birthday and still have the same voice that I did then.
Happy birthday.
Just loud, belting, yeah, Annie voice.
It's okay. In the ensemble then, and then so that was eight. Then what was after that? And you continued to dance? Or did you like start to pull in acting as well?
But I did community theater. Like, you know, that was kind of like a short gig of local stuff. And then I kept doing community theater. I played Annie everywhere. I did the big three, Annie and Dorothy and Peter Pan before my boobs. And
you were Peter Pan.
I was Peter Pan. Oh yeah. I was always the lead. I mean, let's be clear. Was always the lead. So sad. And I just kept doing it and danced. And then in high school, was like on my dance team and still doing theater and doing like a semi-professional theater. But I really wanted to stay in high school. Like there was a chance, like I remember I maybe could have done the Mickey Mouse Club. And so like things would come up and my mom would be like, you know what, let's just stay in high school, have regular high school. And then I ended up working at theme parks. I sang and danced at Great America all during high school, which was awesome and like the best training.
Well, you did Disneyland too, right?
Yeah. So my huge goal, one of the reasons why I stayed in California is I'm a Disney freak. I wanted to do the shows at Disneyland. That was the goal. So before I even went down to LA, I started auditioning for them when I was like 16. And they said they had a great program then where they were kind of like, keep an eye on you and you know, kind of like a grooming program. I don't think they do it anymore. But and I only wanted to do the shows down there. So I chose UCLA and I was not a theater major. I did musicals at UCLA, but I wanted to work at Disneyland. So I started doing the shows at Disneyland. And then very soon after I got to school, I booked Fame LA. And then left school, and then I went back later, but...
You finished, you went back and finished?
Much later, yeah. Yeah.
Well, okay, so Fame, you were then 19, 18?
Yeah, something. No, well, I don't want people to do it. Don't do the math. But yes, around there.
Well, you said you were in college. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. Yeah, I had like a manager. It's so funny, like I'm rambling, but... I had also been cast in the Los Angeles company of Rent as the Maureen cover. Mm-hmm. And I booked Fame LA. It was like, I had done a television pilot for Kenny Ortega, who directs High School Musical and does now all the Descendants movies. And I had done a TV pilot for him, and he was the one who was directing the new Fame. And so that's kind of how I got into it. It was a total fluke that I had just never done television really. That I got this series, and I was like, oh my God, I just booked Rent, and now it was like the best choice as a young person that you could have. And then, you know, after that, things aren't always that easy.
Well, did you think when you booked it, were you like, this is it? My career is here now.
100%. 100%. We did 22 episodes and then it was canceled and nobody watched it and it was terrible. And I learned a ton on that set. But then right after that, I went back to working at Universal and Disneyland.
Really?
Yep. Went right back to it.
Did people come did they recognize you from the show?
No.
Or, no?
No. No. No.
Because I've talked with some people who are like, well, once you get to like, okay, I've been a principal, and then my show gets canceled, and then like you can't go wait tables again because
sure you can.
There's like the image you have to maintain.
Sure, that's in your head though. I mean, and it's difficult. And I always like to talk about this stuff, but there was a big thing last year about the guy that was on the Cosby Show, and someone saw him working at Trader Joe's, and they kind of shamed him, and he was like
Malcolm Jamal Warner.
No,
is that
no someone else? No.
Bill Cosby.
Bill Cosby.
working at Trader Joe's.
I think because it happened to me at such a young age, I didn't really know. Like, to me, I've always thought work is work is work is work is work. Mm-hmm. And I loved performing at theme parks. I loved it. It was my best friends, you know, I mean, are still my friends. I mean, and I was there with Eden Espinosa and Stephanie Block and Wayne Brady and just people that are still my friends that are killing it now. Mm-hmm. And that was the best job you could have in Los Angeles. You did not have to wait tables. You could go and do a show every day. Mm-hmm. If you were a full-time member and you had health benefits.
Or
6 shows a day. Or 12.
I worked at Busch Gardens. I did 10 shows a day in the summer and it was hell.
Yep.
But I loved it.
Yeah, I loved it. And it really like instilled in me a work ethic that is not, I think it's hard to find now. I don't call out of shows. I don't like, and you can always tell like it's very old school, but those shows really taught me how to pace myself and get through. And it, I don't know, it just like, it really, and gave me this sense of community. So I think that's why now I'm like, work is work, wherever you get it. Mm-hmm. And just because I was on a TV show doesn't mean, and it certainly did not mean I was getting another one anytime soon. I continued to work in TV, but it was sporadic for a while.
You have a lot of credits, though.
Yeah. I mean, now, but right after Fame, it was, I expected it to just be like, boom, 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 now I'm going to be a TV star. And that did not happen at all.
Well, what was part of that reality check? Was it that you were being seen for parts different than what you felt you were right for? Or was it you weren't being seen at all? Or, you know, what was that process?
You know, and I talk about this with young performers a lot, and I don't want to get too deep, but that television show, I had such high self-esteem as a teenager. That television show really kind of knocked me for a loop, and I think I had to go through it. I was cast as pretty much the Doris Vinsecker role, the not pretty, not skinny. I was the comedian. Mm-hmm. The actor who like sang and danced, but was like not the pretty one on the show. And it really did a number on me, like my self-esteem. And I think at that age, you don't really know what you are. And there was no YouTube. There was no, you know, it's a totally different world now. Mm-hmm. But the years after that was kind of like a finding out who I was by doing regional theater and by doing theme parks and things. And because I didn't really know what roles I would play. I had just been told by this one company that I was not the pretty one and not the one that was going to get all the leads on television. And that's not, you know, not the case. But I think when you're that young and things happen to you that easily, you're impressionable anyway. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was a weird time, but I really found myself through LA theater then, because that's what I did. Besides those theme parks, I did tons of regional theater in Los Angeles and wanted to come to New York. Oh, Broadway was always the dream, just didn't end up happening till so much later.
Right. Yeah, I remember when I was younger, teenager. I mean, I still have bad skin, but like I had really bad skin back then. And I was like, everyone's like, oh, it's not bad, whatever. But the way that you see yourself is always, I mean, I can say this now as a 39-year-old. Yeah, as a 19-year-old, whatever. I don't know how old I am. As a 39-year-old, I can look back and say how you see yourself is way worse than how everybody else sees you.
Yeah.
And now in this business, too, you may have been cast. I mean, like, I can make myself look ugly. I can do an ugly face.
Right.
I don't think I'm the most attractive person in the world. I don't. And I am who I am.
Right.
Right? And
that's all you can be.
Certain people get opportunities because of how they look. Some people get opportunities because of their talent and their intelligence. And it's all, like, this whole business is a freaking crapshoot.
Oh, it's a total crapshoot. It's all luck. And it just is, you have to have a really thick skin. And I think I luckily came out of it on the other side. I worry about these kids at 17, 18 that have all this stuff happening to them. Even the kids on Broadway, I feel very protective of them that they, because I think it's difficult. And Matilda was so great about how they treated the kids, and the kids didn't stage door, and weren't allowed to talk to them about the show.
They couldn't do the stage door?
No, because it was such a great thing, because you come out of a show and you're signing autographs.
Yeah.
And when that ends, you're just back at school and no one's asking for your autograph. It's a really hard thing to navigate as a kid. And so I loved that. I loved that they did their show. We did not talk to them about show business or our show.
Were you specifically instructed not to?
Yes. Talk to them about their day.
Because just being a normal kid.
Because if you tell an 8-year-old, great show tonight, they're going to go, well, what was wrong with my show last night?
And that, and an that, 8-year-old,
they
much,
will.
A lot of people.
Most people will. I do, you know, but I'm totally insecure. But as an 8-year-old, I think they were just awesome about that. And I loved that kind of approach to it. And it was very much how I grew up. My parents were like, great, you know, go cheerleading, go ice skating, like do other stuff. And that was really important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it has helped. We'll see in the long run.
Well, I really want to get on the insecurity therapeutic side of this because I love that shit. I've been in therapy now for a year and a half, and it's
great.
It didn't come soon enough, obviously. But to make your publicist happy, let's talk about Emoji Land for a second.
Oh, yeah. I mean, oh, yeah, that. No, I love, I mean, like on Twitter, I always say, like, theater kids, your Auntie Leslie wants you to know, because I feel like there's so much I wish that someone had told me about the poop side of the business. You know, that it's not all.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Totally. I mean, like, Emoji Land now is opening off Broadway.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was. There was a workshop. Is that called a workshop?
No.
It's a nymph performance.
It depends. Nymph, which is awesome. The New York Musical Theater Festival? No.
Mm-hmm.
Is this rad festival every summer. And they're brand new writers and new creators. And sometimes there are workshops, but the past three summers, I guess, I've done like a full production. And Emoji Land was one of them. And, you know, there sometimes you do shows and you're like, oh, good first effort. Go back and work on it wherever you're from. And, but, you know, but Emoji Land, we did it. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. And the thing that I loved about it most was Tom Caruso, who is the director, brought it to me. And he goes, okay, no, I'm going to tell you what the title is and just withhold judgment. And he said, Emoji Land. And I was like, okay.
We're actively withholding judgment, mm-hmm. Yes.
And then you read it and it's just genius and brilliant. And so what I love about it is that people, I think, will have this preconceived notion of like, oh, cute and fluffy, whatever. And I cannot wait for them to see it. I can't wait.
And you're in it with Josh Lehman, who is just a comedic genius.
If you see Emoji Land, people listening to this, you will see us crack up because I did not get through a single performance without cracking up.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He makes me laugh so hard.
And he improvises so
much. And they let us play on stage and I just laugh. And that's why when this came up, I was like, oh, no brainer. Josh has to do it with me. So the cast that they've gotten is incredible and the designers. And I'm really, really excited for Keith and Laura, who wrote it, for people to see their work. Because it was really special at Nymph, but now they've got, you know, a chance to really do it.
So I brought up the show because we should, but
yes.
Also as a segue into talking about the poop side of the business, no pun intended with the poop emoji.
Uh-huh.
You're not the age at which you did Fame LA.
Correct.
Yet, okay, so with two Broadway credits, but you're still a very successful working actress.
Yes.
So,
I think.
So my point is that it's not just you get a Broadway show and then all of a sudden the sky opens up and it rains sunshine and rainbows. You still have to work your ass off.
Oh, you're always having to prove yourself, you know, because in Los Angeles, I played every kind of role. And a lot of TV stuff I do is dramatic work. And then you come and do Matilda, and then I followed that up with Dames at Sea.
Mm-hmm.
And then people just think, oh, well, she's just the big kind of broad, funny stuff. So you're constantly having to prove yourself doing smaller things or regional theater. You don't automatically get Broadway shows. And I think kids, when they walk around Pearl Studios and they see all of us waiting, you know, to audition, they realize that, it's not that at all. You have to continually work and, you know, you're only as good as your last gig. So,
mm-hmm.
I'm totally lucky in that I've gotten to do television stuff as well. In between, totally, totally lucky. But I love regional theater too. I love going out of town and doing new shows. I've gotten to do two awesome brand new shows this year and, you know, hopefully one of them will come in next season and we'll see, but that's just what you do is you continually work on stuff and you do workshops and labs mm-hmm. and it's never ending, but.
Do you feel it's harder for comedic women to find roles right now on Broadway? Because I feel like there's a lot of ingenue. It's easy, I put in air quotes.
You know, it's a weird time now for every actor. I think I generally do the supporting roles. And those are usually, like in a musical, they're usually like the funnier roles. But it's a difficult time because I think they're trying to make sure that everything is equal and diverse. And I think it's a weird time for everyone kind of navigating who can do what roles. It's always been harder for women anyway. Mm-hmm. There are just less roles. So that's always going to be difficult. I don't think it's harder for comedic women. I think it's harder for comedic women to be seen as anything but comedic women.
Mm.
And the comedic women are usually the best dramatic actors. It's just how it is. Comedy is so much harder.
Well, comedy's harder, comedy requires more intelligence. And being a bit stereotypical, the very funny people that I know are often some of the saddest.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Inside. Because they
100%.
They want to be the first to put themselves down so no one else can.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was young, I went through this phase of dating comedians and I was like, never again. Like the most depressed people.
Oh, totally. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, Robin Williams is one of the greatest examples of this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I don't think it's harder. I think it's difficult in general just to get a job. It's so difficult. And that's what they don't tell you. And some people it just falls in their lap. And it did for me.
Mm-hmm.
It did for me, absolutely, at 17, 18, to be like, here's everything. And I see that happen to, you know, a lot of young people, like on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you win the Jimmy Award and you get to be a lead in a Broadway show. I want to make sure that when they're not in their Broadway show, they go back to get their, do a high school show. Or, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's really important
yeah.
to go to college and do the college shows because it's just not always going to be like that.
Yeah. I've heard tons of stories too from people now, actors now in their early 30s who for the last decade, like they came out of college and they're one of the lucky few who got a Broadway show straight out of college.
Right.
And there's an even smaller percentage that got another Broadway show directly, but then they didn't work for years.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't do a Broadway show until my 30s because, and it's not that, I guess I wasn't living on this coast, but even after I won the Olivier, I was up for some very high profile Broadway shows that I didn't get. I'm very specific and I knew that. And I knew that it was going to take getting older to kind of grow into what I would end up becoming.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really frustrating. And I would fly out here for so much stuff and get so close. And, you know, I don't fit in everything. It's just nobody does. So the right thing came along, but yeah, I had to go to London first to get get a chance to do
go from show. LA to London.
To London.
Skip
then to
over
here.
New York completely.
Yeah, totally. And then finally, yeah. But then it took British people to get me a Broadway show. And because they had seen Zorro.
Right.
Is how they knew about me at all.
Right. I'm looking for a tweet. Oh, you tweeted last night.
Mm-hmm.
The picture of that really weird like a dog.
I have a thing with crap taxidermy. Really awful taxidermy.
What was that?
Makes me scream laugh. I cry laugh at bad taxidermy. And so I'll always find for my reaction memes or whatever bad taxidermy. And that's a terrible taxidermy fox.
It was a fox?
It was a fox.
It looked like it's just a weird
exactly
dog. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. But the caption was, when you're trying to go to bed early, but your anxiety and raging insecurities are all, hey, batch.
And it was so true.
Like, well, I want to get in this. Okay. So we'll do the therapy part now.
Okay.
Where do your anxiety and insecurities come from? Do you have a moment or is just general?
I mean, it is general a general life? Waterfall of anxiety. I think, and I don't think actors or performers or anybody talks about this enough. I feel like it's why I love telling people about bad auditions or bad, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, you gotta be human. And as an actor, you're always worried about work. You're always worried about, am I good enough? Am I good enough? And you can, people that have like this bravado and project that, I'm envious of them, but I guarantee you they're probably just as insecure. And I meet people all the time at stage doors or whatever being like, you know, I don't know if I'm good enough to do this. I'm like, I don't think I'm good enough to do this. Nobody thinks they're good enough to do it. You just have to get through it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is just raging insecurity all the time. And anxiety, I think if you choose a career in the arts, I think anybody has this, but it's anxiety of, well, you know, what am I going to do next? What am I, you know, what's going to happen to me in 20 years? It's all of that. And I try to live in the moment. It's very hard for me. My brain is always going.
Yeah. I just assumed you were nervous about this interview. So
yes, absolutely. It was.
Yeah, I was like, that's why you couldn't go to sleep last night.
But like I went to bed because I ice skate at 6 a.m. every morning.
Right.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you about being an ice dancer.
That was my dream. Uh-huh.
Ice dancer, not ice skater.
Ice dancer.
Mm-hmm. So an ice dancer, I have no idea what that is. So I need you to tell me. But I pictured like you have cleats on and you're just dancing on the ice.
No, like, it's amazing. I'm going to send you so many YouTubes of ice dancers.
Okay.
It's amazing. It's like, growing up, I was an ice skater and I either had to choose between being a professional, like going for the Olympics, ice dancer or theater. And this was at like age 12 and I chose theater. It worked out okay. But then just recently I went back to skating just for me and because I suck at it and I wanted something that had nothing to do with my business to work at and to get better. And it's awesome and I love it. And so I like do this class 5 days a week.
In 6 a.m.?
Yeah.
Where do you go? Central Park. There's an ice rink in Central Park?
There's an ice rink in Central Park.
Should I know that? I should know that.
Woolman Rink. And then I take private lessons at the Chelsea Sky Rink. I am training for Beijing.
Beijing 2050.
No, I always say that no Olympics or Olympics 20, never. I love it. I love it so much.
But what is the difference between ice dancing and ice skating?
So ice dancing, there really is no difference except that ice dancing does not have jumps like axles or it doesn't have lifts like pairs would, like where they throw the girl.
Yeah. Do you have a partner?
Normally in ice dance you do, but there is solo ice dance, which is kind of what I do. Because I don't really have a partner, but
why has ice dancing not made it to mainstream like ice skating?
Oh, it so has.
Has it?
Oh my god!
Like, are we gonna see ice dancing with the stars soon?
Well, they have it in Britain.
Shut up.
Yeah, it's Dancing with the Stars, but it's on ice.
No,
I think it's called Dancing on Ice. Yeah, they have it over there. It's a huge thing. Mm-hmm. It's awesome. It's my favorite.
Mainstream, and I've completely missed it my whole life.
Did you hear, I mean, the most mainstream, I feel like here, there was this Canadian, my favorite ice dancers are Canadian, they retired, but this turned into an ice dance podcast. But they did like a Moulin Rouge routine
at
the Olympics, and it was awesome. And that kind of like brought it back into the mainstream. Like they were kind of viral for a moment.
Ice dancing is at the Olympics?
Yes.
Do I not watch enough of I watch curling and lugeing and figure skating.
You probably watch ice dance. You just didn't realize you're watching ice dance.
Maybe.
You maybe thought it was pairs or something.
Who's a famous ice dancer that I would have heard of?
You wouldn't have. That's the thing. It's like the single skaters are, you know, more famous. But yeah. So I skate every day. So I have to go to bed early, especially if I don't have a show.
Right.
So last night I was like 9:30. Okay, I'm going to bed and just sat for 2.5 hours just freaking out about everything. Even if my life is fantastic, everything's going great, I still will have anxiety.
I feel like I live in my own bubble. Not in denial. I was going to say in denial, but I don't think in denial. Where am I going with this? I feel like if my life is bad, then it doesn't get to me. I just shut down. Like, it's my defense.
Coping mechanism.
Right?
That's okay, too.
So things are really bad that I'm just like, I guess I'll just go to bed and try again. And so
I think that's a great, great way to do things. What else are you going to do? You have to get up, and we all do. Like, everybody falls down, and you just have to try again. There is no alternative.
Yeah.
I mean, there is, but you know.
No, it's just... It's weird to me because given, of course, this goes back to your relationship with your parents, that I didn't have emotional vulnerability modeled for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so now with my time in therapy and figuring out that like it's okay to be sad.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, also I'm Italian. I'm full Italian. So we're just open screaming people with everything like, I'll tell you how I feel at all times to anybody. And I think that's just part of that culture, I feel like. And also like the family that you grow up with. But yeah, I mean, got to get things out.
Yeah. Well, okay. So my question then, like if it's something in general, like did growing up at the cattle ranch, You're like, oh man, there's all this anxiety of all these cows out here.
No, I didn't. I had no anxiety until I was older.
Really?
Yeah. Until I was older.
And do you remember? Do you remember when you first started realizing, like, oh, this is causing me problems, or I need to talk about this?
You know, it was all during those days at Fame LA that really, like, doubts started
also
to
like
creep in. Yeah,
late teens. Yeah.
Doubts started to creep in, and the first time I ever thought, well, maybe I'm not going to be a big old star. Maybe, you know, maybe because somebody, this executive told me I was ugly. Like, those things.
Someone actually said that?
Oh, to my face.
But you're not.
But somebody somewhere is going to think something about you, and they're going to say it. And as an actor, it's like those message boards that I hate. At least say it to my face. People are always going to tear other people down, sadly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's how you deal with it that is the most important thing. But I didn't have those tools that young. So when somebody said, well, she's the fat one, she can't be in this number, to have the other three girls do this sexy number. When you're that age and somebody says that to you, I didn't have the tools because I was always brought up to believe that I could do anything. And so instead of, and it took me a long time to be like, well, screw you. Now I would. But then it really made me start to doubt myself. And so that's kind of where like insecurities came in. And I'm good at fighting them, but sometimes they just creep in and, you know, and you're staring like the taxidermy fox sometimes.
That's such a creepy.
But I think it's so important for people to talk about it.
Absolutely.
There's no shame. There's no, everybody is, goes through, everybody's got something. Everybody's got something.
Oh, God.
Even when, you know, people look up to these, oh, you're on Broadway, everything must be perfect. I'm like, no.
No. Most people on Broadway are wondering, how am I here?
How am I here? What's my next job? What, you know, like it's never ending. And I mean, that's okay.
That's what I would be. I'd be doing a curtain call as like the lead after winning a Tony and be like, did they make a mistake?
There are people who win Tonys that are never heard of from again. It doesn't matter. It just nothing. You have to stay on your own path. And that's like very important to me and things that I struggle with, looking at other people, what they're doing and how far along they are. It has nothing to do with me.
Right.
I have to remember that. And that kind of keeps the anxiety a little bit at bay.
Hmm. Do you go back? I mean, are you working enough now so you don't have to have, you know, we'll put in air quotes, survival jobs?
Yes.
Like, you're not going to go back and wait tables.
I'm so lucky. I've never waited tables. I've only ever had performing jobs, and that is incredibly rare.
Yeah.
Again, though, LA, all those theme parks. So I've been incredibly, incredibly lucky, and I totally realize that. I have not had a survival job in a long time, but I, you know, again, I spent a lot of time going out of town doing regional theater because mm-hmm. that's what you do as an actor. It's not all about Broadway. And I think for me, having been an LA theater person for so long, it was really like, it made me angry when people would be like, oh, you do theater in Los Angeles. I'm like, those people are the best people I've ever performed with because they're choosing to be in Los Angeles.
Some of the best shows come out of La Jolla.
Completely.
Which is in San Diego.
And so when I got here, and people were like, where have you been? I'm like, I've been working my whole life in not just TV, but in theater in on the other coast. So Broadway's just a street. And I keep, and Tom Hewitt actually said that to me. Do you know Tom Hewitt, the great mm-hmm. Tom Hewitt? I did Kiss Me, Kate with him in Los Angeles. And I had not, I had done London, but I had not done a Broadway show. And he said that to me. He goes, Broadway's just a street. And that stayed with me. And I was like, he's so right. Because it didn't, when I finally did get my Broadway debut, I was so happy and I wept. But then I remember the next week, I was like, it's no different than doing a show in Orange County. It's the same thing. It's just people put more importance on it.
Yeah,
work is work is work is work is work.
They don't have the Tony Awards of Orange County.
Well, they kind of do.
Well, not televised. Do you know Japan, they get a telecast of the Tonys?
Do they really?
Yeah, Japan loves the Tony Awards. They love Broadway.
Wow.
Actually, you know, I make a joke. It's like, I'm huge in Japan. This podcast is actually, I get a lot of streams from Japan.
Nice. Hi, Japan.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hello.
Konnichiwa. Hello, Japan.
Konnichiwa.
I guess we should talk about Emoji Land.
Yeah. Let's go back to Emoji Land. Yeah. How did you get connected with it?
Well, so Tom Caruso, the director, was the associate on Matilda. And I just love him. And I had done another NIMP show for him called Matthew McConaughey versus the Devil, which was amazing and so freaking funny. And so he brought Emoji Land to me. He said, I'm doing this show and you're the only person that can do this. And he goes, it's the princess. And I was like, oh, done, done. And so I did, because I will always do NIMP. I think it's so important to do up and coming people's work if you have the time, and I just think it's so important. And so I loved the music. I loved this show and I love this character. I call myself queen, like it's a joke, but to be able to be like, oh my God, I'm playing the freaking princess emoji. It was a no brainer for me. So I did it at NIMF and loved it. And just people were like, oh my God, this is really great. And kind of kept tabs on Keith and Laura, cause they're from LA and we have so many mutual friends, and I knew that they were kind of working on stuff. And then a few months ago, I was talking to Tom and he said, guess what's coming back around? And he told me Emoji Land. He said that they want to do an off-Broadway production. I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. Well, if that happens, I'm totally in. And I like, amazingly, it is like perfect in schedule wise for me to do it. And I just I'm so excited about it because it's so funny. It's touching. It's so smart. And the music is so kick-ass. It's really great.
I'm looking forward to it. I didn't see the NIMP production.
Oh my God. I'm so excited for it. I haven't been this excited for a show in a really long time.
So are you West Coast based or live
in New York? My husband lives in LA and I go back and forth.
Oh, really?
So yeah, I moved out here from Matilda 6 years ago.
Right.
And was like, oh, I'll just be here a year. And now I just go back and forth. So I go back to LA and luckily get to go back and do television stuff in Los Angeles. But I've been here, yeah. So back and forth.
Is that hard on your husband to be apart? Or no, you too?
No. We've always done that. I was in London I didn't see him for 3 months before we got married. My mom had to like finish the wedding planning. It was this giant Italian wedding. And I found out I was going to London because Equity wouldn't exchange me because I was a nobody. And so I was the only American that went over there. So finally I found out last minute I was going. 3 months I had been touring because we toured Zorro before we did the West End to kind of work out the kinks. So toured, came home, got married, left a week later to go back to London and open it on the West End. And that was the first 2 years of our marriage, was me in London and him in LA. So we're really used to it. And when we met, I was on tour. Like, it just has always been that way. So we're really great at it. And it makes the time together that much more special.
Oh.
Because, you miss the person. We've been married now almost 12 years.
Yeah.
So it's like, it just really, it's, yes, you miss them. But thankfully, there's FaceTime and, I can see his face.
Yes.
Sometimes I'll just call and he'll be at work and I'll just look at his face. We look fine. Keep working.
I used to, my best friend from high school and college, like before internet, well, it was right when internet, broadband and everything. But when we were, first time we lived apart, we would just call each other. And he and I would just like sit on the phone for hours.
Yeah.
And we'd both be doing our own thing, like playing on the computer or doing whatever.
Yeah.
And like we'd be, oh yeah, so awesome, blah, 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 blah. And then we come back and we're still
like, yeah, totally. So the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I was in London, it was Skype. FaceTime wasn't there yet.
Yeah.
Skype with like the little camera on your computer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But no, it works out. It works out really well. And he is very supportive and knows that this was my dream to be in New York.
Is he a muggle?
He's a muggle.
Yeah.
He's a muggle. But he gets it. He did theater in high school and college. And so like he gets it, but it's really nice to go see a show with somebody who'd probably rather be watching the football game. There's something very freeing in that. And when he sees shows of mine, it's never, he's never like, oh my God, you are just, well, it's never overflowing. It's like, good job. It's very sports. You know what I mean? Like,
good game.
It is very much like that. And like any injuries that I've had has been very like sports talk. And there's something I really like about that. It took me a while because I was like, why are you not like my gay fans that are like, you're the most amazing thing? And he was like, it's just not what he is. And it's really cool.
Where do you get your validation from?
It has to be from me. And that took a really, really long time.
Really?
It has to be. Because there's so much noise on the internet now of people telling you what you are, what they think you are. You have to like shut it down. Because I said this before, somebody somewhere will think you suck. It's just how it is.
Always.
So once you realize that, it kind of takes the pressure off. And it takes the pressure off of everyone has to like me in this role. Everyone has to like me as a person. And it's just really if I like what I'm doing. I don't read reviews anymore. At the last like 3 or 4 years, I've been really, really adamant about not reading reviews. And people will, I can always tell if they're good or bad just by people's reactions. But after Dames at Sea, because I loved that show and people loved that show and the critics just tore it apart because they didn't get it. They didn't understand how in a year of Hamilton, this little 6-person musical could exist. And it was comparing it to those shows instead mm-hmm. of judging it on its own merit. And after it really broke my heart and I was like, I can't, because it tarnished how much I loved doing the show and how much we loved doing it as that little company. It really kind of tarnished that. And I decided after that, I was not going to let somebody's opinion dictate how I felt about my job or how I felt about what I was doing. Because in the end, it's the audience, how they feel about it, not some jackass on a message board. You know, I just had to do it with all of it. Even like the Times reviews, like I can't, I respect them, but I just can't read it.
I don't understand why people, well, maybe it's a generational thing. Because remember, like Siskel and Ebert, right? They had a TV show where they basically could make or break a movie.
Yeah. And it's very similar in theater now. And that's their job. That's fine. But everybody's a critic now. Everybody's an armchair critic. My director finds, and then she finds the funny ones, people, what they write about me on the internet, on message boards, and I read them. And they're awful, but so awful that they're funny. But she finds them and weeds them up. But I read them because I'm like, A, this is not your job. B, you're probably 13. I don't know. You know, it just is, it's that stuff that, and I talk about stuff like that and shutting out the noise. Mm-hmm. But that's anybody's job, you know? Again, somebody's going to think you suck. Somebody does. But it's very hard. Some people can read reviews and not care. Genuinely not care. Although, I'm not sure it's genuine. They say it doesn't get to them. But I just can't do it personally.
It's not the fact that one person said something bad. I think for me, it's that now my mind starts just escalating down this path of, well, if 10 people believe this, and then they tell 10 more people, then it's just
totally,
all,
you'll drive
it's all
going to
go downhill.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care specifically that one person didn't like me.
Yeah.
It's the societal amplification that drives me up.
Yeah.
It drives me up the wall.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anxiety. Ain't it fun?
Anxiety. That's a good podcast. Ain't it fun?
Anxiety. Ain't it fun?
But I think, you know, dealing with stuff like that is you got to find what works for you.
Yeah.
For me, I got to stay away from that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just, but that's been like years of spiraling and crying over stuff, you know. Then finally you're like, you know what? I'm just going to not.
I stopped. There's videos of me on YouTube all over the place, and I'm just like, I just gotta stop. I gotta stop reading this. I gotta stop caring. And now I'm at the point, it's funny, Desi Oakley and I got into this pretty hardcore, that both of us, we don't care what people think. I don't care what people think about me, but I want everyone to like me.
Totally. And that's our society now. You literally get likes on a picture that you post or something that you write or, you know, and that is literally what's happening. And you can gauge, I think people gauge their lives off of, oh God, nobody liked this tweet. Oh, I'm a terrible person. And you have to like divorce yourself from that. You have to.
Funny on social media.
I love it. I love it. But I think people connect with it because I'm open and honest. I mean, there are times my husband's like, will you please not tweet about your bikini wax? You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, but I love it because I like showing the other part of it. I like showing the things that happen to be that aren't so great.
Right.
I think it brings people together. I love that stuff. So people's perfect social media presences, I couldn't do that.
You reply to people a lot, so you're actively engaged.
Oh yeah,
and you have to read it. How do you ignore the bad stuff?
I'm really, you know, it's so funny.
How do you stay away from
that? You know what's so funny is since people know that I read the bad comments on like message boards and things. It's been like my best friend directs my cabaret show, and we've noticed we were like, people aren't writing things anymore because they know that we're going to take it and read it. So luckily, hasn't been that bad. Twitter, you know what? I will retweet people who say horrible things to me and call them out on it because that is very important.
Yeah.
People are not accountable on social media. And so I will hold you accountable. And most often they'll just delete their tweet or people will go after them because you need to learn. And I've come under fire a couple times for going after like a teenager, but you need to learn. You cannot say horrible things to people in this world, in this time. You need to be accountable. So if people say something terrible to me, and I'm very lucky, and I mean, I don't have like giant followings, but I'm very lucky with the people that don't say horrible things to me, but I'll call you out 100%.
Yeah, I think you should. It's not for a vengeful thing, just for like shining a spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
And be like, yeah, you shouldn't do that. And what's interesting to me is I've got two small kids, and part of the educational curriculum now is learning how to become a good online citizen.
Oh, that's so important.
Yeah, which
really
a lot of
is
how to interact.
Yeah. People are angry now. People are so angry.
So many people.
And now they have a platform to be angry on. They have multiple platforms to be angry on. And everybody's offended by everything. As a comedian, comic person, it's really difficult to be funny these days because somebody's going to be offended by it. You know, I grew up on Mel Brooks movies. You can't.
You couldn't do that now?
You can't. And it's sad
because
we've lost the ability to laugh at ourselves. You know, that's why I love the South Park guys, because they just don't care.
No.
And I think I really do feel that we've lost that ability to laugh at ourselves and just not everything has to be offensive. Just let it roll off your back. I mean, but if something is truly bothering you, call those people out or talk about it. But maybe let's not rush to anger right away, because that's the other part of social media is just people just ranting and ranting. So I think that's really important for young people to learn to just, A, be good people, but then also be a good online person as well.
Someone told me that it's assuming good intent.
Mm-hmm.
So there's obviously two sides to every story.
Or way to do it,
or more than two. And if you are offended by something somebody did or said, look at it again, but assume good intent. And talk to them about it.
Absolutely.
Because you may have interpreted it in a way that they didn't even mean it. Maybe you interpreted exactly how they meant it.
Yeah.
In which case, they're kind of a dick.
Absolutely, yeah.
But otherwise, it saved me from a lot of conflicts. I'm like, oh. Okay,
yeah.
Well, maybe they didn't mean this. I'm just going to ask.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, Oh, no. Okay. So it was like there was one word missing that added all the context.
Right. Well, Tim Minchin has like a genius song called Context that is literally that. And it's, you know, I just think art in general, and I'm not an arty person by any means, so the fact that I just said art in general makes me want to throw up. But I think it's really hard in what we do in this time. I think it's really difficult to make everybody happy.
Yeah.
You know, classic musicals now have to be redone. And there's, I don't really know how I feel about all of that. You know, I don't, I think things are just, you can't go back and change what's already happened. You can only move forward. So then don't do those shows. You know what I mean? You don't have to go back and rip them apart. Just maybe write something new like Lynn did, you know, and I think it's difficult, but especially like comedy these days is really hard.
Yeah. Well, you can't make fun of things. I mean, Seth Meyers gets away with just, you know, it's all dad humor now, which I think is awesome. You know, everybody can commiserate.
Yeah.
Most people can commiserate. Yeah, I agree with you. It's hard. And I think you want to talk about like reading bad things, comedians, they take it left and right.
Yeah.
They got to take it, you got to ignore it. And,
But what's, going back to Emoji Land, what's so great about, I can't wait for you to see it, because what is so great about this show is it is 100% dealing with all of these issues under the guise of cute emojis, 100%. I don't want to give too much away, but there's a firewall that's built to keep out different emojis. Different color emojis, same sex emojis. You know, it is really dealing with all of these issues. And so I think it's really, really important and valid. and I love that it's under this umbrella of, oh, cute emoji land, because you'll leave and you'll be like, oh, I just got schooled.
Yeah.
It's really special. So I'm looking forward to. I'm sure people are going to be talking about stuff after. Yeah, I don't want to give it away. But
all right. Mm-hmm. Well, let's use that to transition into our three standard closing questions that I ask everyone to wrap up the podcast. Mm-hmm. The first one is, what motivates you?
What motivates me? I think it is kind of what we were just talking about. What motivates me is trying to make wherever I am a little better than when I left it. If that, you know what I mean? Like I just being a good person and making a mark, whether that is professionally, but more importantly, personally, it motivates me that I would like to make a positive mark wherever I am.
All right.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to your younger self and younger people listening now starting out down a similar path?
Oh, your path is not going to be the path that you thought it was. And it's going to be sometimes better, sometimes way worse, but it is your path. And it is exactly the path you're supposed to be on. Just go with the detours. Go with the detours. Wear comfortable shoes. And don't look at the map.
I don't think there's a map.
You're going to have to throw it out. Yeah. I had a map. I think everyone has a map when you're starting out.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I agree with that. And then the final question is, if you can only see one show for the rest of your life, but you can see it as many times as you want, what would you see?
Fantasmic. In Disney World or Disneyland.
Oh, yeah, you're such a Disney nut.
Totally.
Disney Star Wars nut.
Yeah, if it's a live show, yeah, there's something about those live shows at Disney that make me so happy. It just, so I would see that. I know that that's not arty, whatever. Musicals, there isn't one that I'd want to see over and over and over again.
No, you had your answer. That's fine.
No, that was my I'm going with my gut. Fantastic.
All right. So everyone, Get tickets to Emoji Land.
Emoji Land. We open January 9th.
January 9th through March 8th.
Uh-huh.
Yes, at the Duke on 42nd Street. Yeah. So dukeon42.org is where you can go online and get tickets. And you are on Instagram and Twitter at Queen Leslie, L-E-S-L-I.
No E. Thanks,
that's
Mom.
Right.
Oh, man.
She messed up. That's anxiety right there.
That's anxiety.
Are people going to spell my name right?
A-L-A-N. I mean, my name is Leslie Margarita. Like, that's a porn name if I've ever heard one. Like, I mean, I get that all the time. Is that your stage name? I'm like, why would I name myself Leslie Margarita? With an I. It's like Bambi. With like Leslie.
Candy.
Totally.
You can get more of me at thetheaterpodcast.com. Support this podcast at theaterpodcast.com/Patreon. I am on Instagram and Twitter at theater_podcast. This is edited by Matthew Hendershot. Thank you to Jukebox the Ghost for the intro and outro music you are hearing right now. And Leslie Margarita, my co-porn star. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
I have to say, you are such a beautiful, beautiful person.
Oh, thanks.
All around.
That's like, all I want.
You are. And I hope everyone sees that. And whoever that executive was, screw that guy.
Yeah, and I don't think he's working anyway. So.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take a deep breath. Make the world a little colorful.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.